And good evening, everybody. Welcome again yet to the Open Paddock Podcast. This being August 18th, 2010. Sean here as usual. Joining me is Mike. Say hello, Michael.
Good evening, everyone.
And it has been an exhaustive week, but, you know, you have those with work.
Yes, I've invented new ends of the candle to burn this week, so.
Oh, nice.
It's been a joy, but I was able to put a project to bed, and now I can focus on my passions and enjoy some podcasting goodness, talking about IndyCar, Rally, and maybe a little F1.
Yeah, just a little bit, because they're still on vacation, and they could actually probably stay on vacation. No complaints out of me.
But it's hard to say that when the next race is Spa.
You're right.
You know, get Spa and Monza and Japan out of the way, and then you can put the series to bed for the year.
Nice. Well. Well, we'll go ahead and start with our IndyCar stuff. And we've had a lot of stuff actually kind of going on here the last few days anyways as we gear up for Sonoma. And the first one was we were expecting an announcement out of Texas Motor Speedway, which we...
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Eddie Gossage in his motorsports extravaganza at the Hard Rock Cafe with, I don't know, they had live music and NASCAR stars and IndyCar stars and da-da-da-da.
Yeah. The event to end all events.
Yes. Lots of hype. Oh, yeah. But good for Texas, good for Eddie, because it's good for the paying customer when the races are promoted, and he's definitely the consummate promoter, as this event shows. But
yes,
do tell, what did they announce for the IndyCar series?
Well, there was a lot of there was actually a lot of kind of speculation as to what exactly we were going to get. Some were venturing to say that it would be a twin dual kind of race. Others were saying along the lines of, there's just all kinds of wild speculation. I don't think you can really say just one thing. But we did have, in the end, the announcement came out that the Texas race at, or the Texas event, rather, on the calendar, is now going to be actually the dual idea that came out. So we will have two twin 275 races taking place on June 11th. Down at Texas Motor Speedway, and that actually, the other good news that came out of that is we actually will have a week between the Indy 500 and Texas. As you remember, this year we decided that we were going to just do one week, no break, just one after the other, and that race was terrible. I mean, the racing was pretty good, but the attendance was the worst that track has had to have ever seen.
Yeah.
You know, everybody was tired. Nobody really wanted to watch a race in Texas coming off the heels of the 500, especially with all the Mike Conway incidents, the fuel mileage incidents. Nobody knew exactly, you know, it was a busy race. And then we go ahead and we go to the next big race on the calendar being Texas, and the crowd was dead. You know, everybody's tired. The drivers are tired. The crews are tired. And then, you know, so this, I think the best news out of the whole entire deal is a 1 week break, which is what we need. But we also have this prospect of a dual 275, which for the IndyCar series anyways, and any really any major form of motorsport, is a new idea in the sense that they're actually going to go out there and put this as a dual points paying event. Not confused with the dual races at Daytona.
Yeah, this is going to be interesting to see how this plays out, you know, when they actually publish the rules for this, because, you know, the short track promoters who run these type of twin 25s and twin 30s and twin 50s and things like that, a lot of times what they'll do is they'll start the first event under their normal procedure and then start the second event inverted. From the results of the first event. So can you see Dario Franchitti starting at the back?
And Milka Duna potentially on pole position.
Woo!
Yeah. Yeah, the final details of the event itself are not worked out at the moment. Obviously, you know, the decision is fresh. And, you know, so they're really, you know, I like this because what they're really trying to do, if you boil it down to what it is spark interest in the series.
Yeah.
No, yeah. As we mentioned, no other series has two dual points paying races such as we'll see at Texas. And, you know, the idea of having an inverted field, the idea of having, you know.
Yeah, I doubt that comes about. I just can't see the IndyCar series letting that happen because it is, you know, it is a sport, not, you know, it's a sport first and then entertainment second. It mm-hmm. is my impression of the series. Maybe they're trying to change their priorities, but I doubt that would be allowed. We'll see.
They have to. And the interesting thing about this is, from what I've heard, is it looks like we're going to have each race paying half the points. Have you heard that?
Yeah, I haven't heard one way or another. It's a good presumption that that's what they would do. Yeah. Maybe they'll pay bonus. Because it's two separate races. You know, you have a lot of potential issues with two separate races. You come in after the first race. If there's a crash in the first race, well, the person's probably not going to compete in the second race, you know?
Yeah. Smaller teams especially.
But, you know, how is that very different from you know, if they ran their normal, you know, 550 kilometers is what they're talking about, twin 275-kilometer events, because for some reason Texas thinks that's cool.
Yes, kilometers is what attracts us American IndyCar fans, because we work in the realm of kilometers.
Yes. Anyway, kilometers per hour. What is that?
Yeah, what is that?
Why is that number so different?
Is it like money? Does that change according to who's driving?
Well, you know, it very well could be. You know, the exchange rate is down, so yeah. You know, 150 kilometers an hour is actually faster than.
I'm just kidding.
Yeah, a lot of fun could be had with, you know, the permutations and what could end up happening. But, you know, this is a brand new idea for the IndyCar series. This is a throwback idea for when, you know, USAC and CART were running it. And I think I read the 89 or something like that was the last 81 was the last time that they've done dual races like this. USAC did it, you know, like two races on the same weekend, back-to-back days. And they still do things like that where they do doubleheader shows at tracks. You know, they go one night and do their full program. They go the next night and do their same full program again. But this will be unique and interesting, and I wouldn't mind to see, you know, maybe some short, like, five-lap heats determine the starting order or something like that.
Oh, that'd be nice.
I would, but... Yeah, they're already risking the equipment enough.
Yeah.
Maybe if Milka Duno gets pitched out of the series on her ear like they should pitch her out, maybe that'll go better.
And one of the things also that we've had floated around is the winner's purse, because it is, at the end of the day, about the money. And, you know, we've heard, you know, to the tune of, you know, people saying that, well, they need to maybe give like $1 million bonus purse, or, you know, it's looking like, you know, something like 200,000 or something, you know, something like that.
Yeah. But,
you know, I just, you know, I agree, you know, if Gossage is so, you know, kind of hell bent on this sweet idea, you know, he's bringing the innovation to the IndyCar series through his racetrack. Then if we're talking like $1 million purses to make it, you know, something truly worth, you know, remembering, you know, he should foot the bill for that. I mean, he's not short on cash, that's for sure. And it also, you know, what is the benefit of winning both races? I mean, what is it?
Well, you know, obviously, points? If you win both races, you get 50 points. But there has to be something other than 50 points up for grabs. Maybe each race pays more than 25 points to the winner. Maybe there's a special bonus structure for where you finish in both races. Like the highest average position gets an extra 10 points or something like that. Mm-hmm. The money is an interesting one because, you know, the typical way this is handled is that the track pays a sanctioning fee, and out of that sanctioning fee and sponsorships from the series and everything, they pay a purse. Mm-hmm. Sometimes the track has some funds as well that go into the purse, but the majority of it's paid out of the sanctioning fee.
Okay.
Yeah, and the fact of the matter is the IndyCar series has no purse right now. They have their team program, which pays like $1.3 million to each full-time team per entry per year. Uh-huh. And then the winner, the first three places at each race get a pittance of a bonus. Like, you win, you get $30,000. It's not that much, but it's something to say you won. At Indy, that's completely different. You know, if you start the race, you get like $300,000.
Yeah.
And then, of course, if you win the race, it's quite a bit more.
Well, we'll have to see. I think
that that's going to be changing because I think the IndyCar series is getting on more solid financial ground than when they had to go to that. They really had to go to that team structure.
Okay.
Because of...
we're broke.
Folding, disappearing. That was done before the that was done around the same time as the CART merger. It was shortly after the CART or shortly before the CART merger, if I remember right. But anyway, gonna be fun.
Yep.
I'm interested to see this play out because, you know, I remember when they were talking about the Cleveland possibility, you know, last year. Cleveland, there was a possibility that they're going to come into the series again as a airport track, run the old airport road course layout, and then also run an oval layout, you know, a flat track oval layout, which would be kind of an interesting idea to run two separate events, two different styles of racing on the same weekend. And I'm like, I'm thinking, bring it on, you know, bring this. On the twin, the dual races, bring on, you know, different things to do in qualifying. Texas has done some weird things. And so, you know, they've done things in the past, like for qualifying, you do your four lap average, but your four lap average also has to include a pit stop.
Oh,
you know, so they've done some, they've tried to mix it up a little bit, and that's usually a really good idea. I mean, you know, you and I have talked about this before. Yes. Why would I ever go to IndyCar Series qualifying on an oval other than Indy? I mean, four laps and round, 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 round.
And we're done.
Next car. Round, round. It's worse than NASCAR. At least in NASCAR, it's just two laps.
You know? Yeah, exactly. Just get it over with. Get it out of here.
Yeah. Yeah. So, anyway.
Well, I agree. So, we'll just have to... Yeah, we'll have to see how that goes. It's going to be an interesting direction for the series, and I'm sure it'll get huge kind of public, you know, PR once it gets closer to actually happening. Yeah. And we'll also hear a little bit, so keep it over at the paddock for the details, as we'll be sure to keep you abreast of all the things that are going on with the prize money, qualifying. Will we see inversion? Will we not? So, but speaking of 2011 and some of the sweet things, we also had some news with the Baltimore Grand Prix. Now, as we know, we've had a ton of NASCAR schedule swapping and IndyCar having to compensate and change their own schedules. And Baltimore, which hasn't even been run yet, but has now been moved, is now moved to Labor Day, which would be here in just a couple weeks, which will actually be really nice, I think. And they're going to change the track layout a little bit according to the representatives at the group that is promoting this.
Yeah, it's kind of a couple of interesting points. Number one, they've changed the track layout. I really couldn't tell you what the track layout was before this because it's been going through a bunch of, you know, the design drawing board and everything. I think this is the first time I've seen something that's been confirmed as a track layout. So we'll talk about that in a second. First things first, Kentucky is has moved this year from their normal date, which was right around now. Maybe last weekend would be their normal date. They've moved on to Labor Day weekend for this year. And I wasn't too excited about that because I like to use Labor Day for family and stuff like that. And it's just around the corner and it's such a good race. But I am going to make it down there this year. So we're looking forward to that.
Oh, nice.
But that said, Kentucky's getting a NASCAR event and it's just like 3 weeks away from the Brickyard 400. It's going to cause some interesting interplay with all these fans out of Indy that. Really, they'll see a better race if they go to Kentucky. I hate to say it, but
the Brickyard 400 is garbage.
Yeah, while there is the prestige of racing at Indy, there is no prestige in the procession they put on. It's worse than F1 there.
Oh yeah, it's absolutely miserable. I hate it.
Yeah, I went to that a couple of times and then decided, you know, I can spend that money better. Anyway, but, you know, going ahead and moving that event, I'm happy with that. Now, going on from that, the track layout is slightly different this time around. Like I said, I couldn't tell you what the track layout was before, but it is going to incorporate the Orioles Park, Camden Yards. It's going to incorporate the Inner Harbor area, which we've known about for a while. I think the new change is that it actually goes around Camden Yards instead of bypassing it. What I like about the track layout is there are several high-speed straights followed by a sharp turn. Turn one particularly is that nice long front stretch with a fairly, over 90 degree turn. Mm-hmm. And then turn three also might be a good overtaking opportunity because you go down kind of a sweeping corner out of turn one through turn two and then onto a straight and then a big hairpin. Mm. Now, the question is how tight will that hairpin be? Because it's kind of one of these things where it's a double wide street. So they'll probably be going down one side of the street and then, coming back on the opposing traffic lane side of the street.
Okay.
Maybe a median in the middle. I don't know. I'm going to have to get out Google Maps.
Yeah.
But right. That looks like a good opportunity. And then there's another straight with a 90 at the end of it, which also looks like a possibility. So there are a few good places. It looks like there might be some overtaking, going on.
That to me sounds like a bunch of places where Thomas Schechter can hit Alex Tagliani and cause more Twitter wars.
Ooh, see, now Thomas Schechter is more likely not going to hit anybody in turn one and three. He'll probably hit him in the tighter, twistier portions of the track where you shouldn't be trying to pass.
Nice.
But you do anyway.
Of course.
Thomas Schechter, Mario Marias, same person.
Lambs to the slaughter.
Oh my, yes. So like you said though, all kinds of track information is coming out right now and it's fun to listen to it. But I did hear Indy Racing Weekly this week, Randy Bernard was on there and he said the goal is still to have the schedule at least 90% announced by August, by the end of August. So just here in the next couple of weeks, we should be hearing a lot of the full details for the schedule for next year.
Interesting. Well, I'm excited for it. And I think especially having, a race in Baltimore during that time frame and really letting the fans, as I said, take advantage of the beautiful scenery as well. Because it should start, the leaves should be starting to kind of change a little bit. Around that time, so that'll be really nice.
Yeah, that's going to be one that I'm going to look at heavily for next year. I can't say I've ever been to a street course race, and this might be an interesting opportunity to go see one. So,
Well, we shall we move on to Honda?
Ooh, Yeah, these are some interesting quotes. Honda is talking about their situation with the IndyCar series. We talked about it last week. It's not arrogance out of Honda to say, you know, we're going to be fielding all 33 and then maybe 2013 someone will come in. It's just the reality.
Oh,
it's,
yeah.
The rules package took too long to come out. And when they finally announced it, really didn't leave people time to really start a program. Basically, their quote in this article from Autosport, we are operating on the assumption there won't be any competition in 2012. We have to be prepared to be the sole supplier. If sole supply changes the competition at some point, then we've made some investments for that as well.
Mm-hmm.
But here's the kicker in this article. At Mid-Ohio, I guess Randy Bernard was making the rounds, making the statement that that an American engine supplier is very, very, quote, very, very interested in joining the series. Let's hope it's something good to hear. I mean, if it's Dodge saying they're interested in the series, I don't really give that much credibility because, well, Dodge probably isn't going to be around in 2013, so.
Nice. Low blow.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I think that it's going to be Ford.
I'm hoping it's Ford. There are some people on track for him doing some connect the dots that I wasn't. Yeah, I wasn't terribly excited to hear. One of the connect the dots was, I guess, a concept for the Chevy C7 Corvette. A concept for the C7, it has a V6 engine.
Okay.
And I'm just not too interested in that.
No.
I mean, not too interested in Chevy after they just let their engine die on the vine in Indy. You know, I'd really like to see some new blood in the series. I'd really like to see Ford in the series. They're the only American manufacturer right now that's, you know, worth much,
yeah,
given that 60% of GM is still owned by the Obama administration.
You went there.
I went there.
Can we never have a podcast where we just don't talk politics for once?
So what do you think about the mosque in New York?
You know what? People will hate me.
Let's not even say a thing right now.
People will hate me, so I cannot say it. So. But, you know, whatever.
I like pork. Do you like pork?
Well, I just want to say it. No, I don't have a problem with it. Mainly because it's the right. But it's not, certainly, you know, it's not the whole religion is not as violent. So, you know, if you want to put it down there, is it distasteful? Maybe a little bit. Should have maybe thought about it. But you know what? You have just by the U.S. Constitution, you have just as much right to put it there as anybody else. So, oh, wait a second. The Twitter numbers are diving already. Oh, crap. I take it back. No. No, I'm just saying, by constitutional purposes, you have the right.
Constitutional right, you have the right to build a mosque if you can gain the funding and the location and everything, as long as you would give other religious groups the same right.
Exactly. Everybody else
however,
has that right.
You also have the same right to apply for a vendor's license outside of said mosque and sell hot dogs.
Nice. Or 9/11 gear.
Yo!
Yes. I hear you.
Okay.
But let's get on to racing.
Couple things to talk about before we jump into Sonoma, which will be a short preview because Sonoma's a dog of a track in a nice setting.
look at the winery.
We got some confirmation this week that Tony Kottman will be writing the rules package for the 2012 IndyCar.
All right. I guess.
Number one, the teams really pitched a fit, I guess, at Mid-Ohio in a meeting, basically saying, we can't tell you what we think of this rules package because you haven't given us a rules package. We can't tell you what we think of this new car because we don't know what it's going to be. Right now, what we know is you have a Spec Dallara Honda package, and we don't like the current Spec Dallara Honda package. So they were making pretty much a bit of a stink over the unknowns of the situation. And, you know, the IndyCar series is in a weird predicament because let's be blunt, until Randy Bernard came along, he made this comment at Mid-Ohio in his Q&A. When he came into the series, the first thing he started hearing when he started talking to the fans was that it was a given. They considered it a given that they would continue with a spec Dallara Honda, because that seemed to be what Brian Barnhart and the current the previous administration were letting basically sit there. So when Randy came in, he went through the iconic process, and I think they did a very good job. I like what they came up with. Certainly it could be better, but let's say it could be better if the economy were better. Mm-hmm. And if the penetration of the series into the consciousness of the American public were better, yeah, they could do full competition. But they don't have that, so they have to go with what they have, and they did an excellent job with what they have. Mm-hmm. So moving forward, they finally announced what it's going to be. Now they have to write the rules. And you would love for this process to have completed last October, November, when they said it was going to be completed. And it's not done yet, because we still don't know the rules.
Yeah.
We don't know if there's going to be a Formula One-esque box around the aero areas where you can develop and where you can't. And if it's in this polygon on such and such a, graphical representation, then you can't put a wing there. That kind of stuff. Or just all in all, so much of this is still up in the air, and the teams don't like that eventuality. Honda comes out and says, we think we're going to have a 40% reduction in cost. They haven't said what the cost will be. They've just kind of dilly-dallied around the 40% reduction in cost.
Mm-hmm.
So I can understand the team's trepidation. Now, getting a guy like Tony Kottman to run the thing, number one, he's one of the few people that's done something like this before, so it makes sense. When they brought in the Panos, DP01 chassis into Champ Car, Tony was leading it.
And it was awesome.
They did it. There were technical hiccups. Don't let anybody tell you it was phenomenal. It was a rousing success, because
awesome.
Let's be honest. They had all kinds of issues with that car. Now, if you remember Champ Car, they were doing this onboard starter idea, and that onboard starter would get the cars underway quicker, and you wouldn't, it's the same kind of idea IndyCar went with, being able to back up. Mm-hmm. And they put in the reverse gear. So they threw that in there, but nobody, after the first few trials, nobody would use it, because there is too much of a danger of draining the onboard battery to try and restart the car. They would much rather wait for the tech crew to come in and restart the car for them than risk draining the onboard battery. So that was a technical snafu. They had snafus with the fuel delivery on the car. The fuel pump, I think, was an issue. And they had a lot of snafus and problems with it, but they worked through it, and it was still a very cost-effective chassis, like $200,000 price range. So they did a good job, but, as many will point out, probably the reason that we're not even hearing a word about the DP01 right now is that it was really never designed, targeted to be an oval car.
Okay.
So anyway, you got Kottman writing the specs, and I think across the board, everybody's happy with that. I think there's really an anti-Brian Barnhart sentiment, right, wrong, or indifferent, in the series. At Mid-Ohio, we saw a guy running around with a day-glow yellow T-shirt that said "Fire Barnhart."
Yeah!
That's the jump on that one. The one guy running around with the Park Milka shirt, and another guy with the Fire Barnhart shirt,
Oh yeah, it was open anarchy.
Indeed.
So,
I was hoping that guy'd show up at the Q&A and ask Brian questions.
Nice.
So please explain to me why you still have a job.
Nice. Well, I kind of make some not so good decisions, and
it's hilarious. Doug has been kind of harping on this one. He's made the comment that the technical rules are not, the actual rules of competition are not available for me to go look at and see what the actual blocking rule is.
Mm-hmm.
Now Barnhart was on IndyCar Weekly, and he was talking with Mike King about it. And they were – no, it was Trackside. And they were asking him, can you tell me where this rule's from and what it is? And he, well, it's 93A and da-da-da rule book and blah, 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 and you should have it. And they're like, we don't have it. You know, we're on the media site and everything like that. We don't have the rule book. And he's like, well, you should have it. You know, it's publicly available. You know, it's available to Downforce members through the points that they accrue for going to races and such.
You get a rule book?
You can purchase a rule book with your Downforce points.
Wow.
Okay. Now here's the thing. Doug pointed out it was the 2009 rule book that's available.
Oh, nice. For and Doug should know because Doug racks up massive Downforce points.
Yes.
So much so as Texas is usually not an issue for him.
Yes. Races so, are free for.
Yes. So
his dad was tooling around that weekend. He went to the Downforce deal. His dad got a free pre-race hot pass.
Oh, nice. Yep.
And got a hat autographed by every driver in the series.
For nothing.
For being a member of Downforce and winning the drawing at the race. So, hey, good stuff.
Yeah, I'm that's gonna awesome.
Going to get into Downforce next year.
Yeah, I'm kind think of I will too. We should do that. It should be like a New Year's resolution. Actually, indeed. Join Downforce.
So, anyway, so Cotman is writing the technical rules, and I think we're all happy about that.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. We could be going down the Brian Barnhart school of I suck at everything, but thankfully, you know, we're not. And I think a lot of people have called on Cotman to come in and do this job. I know that, for example. Robin Miller was oh my god, he's like infatuated. The dude might as well marry him.
Yeah, I mean Robin Miller's nose is a special New Zealander shade of brown.
Nice. Yeah, so he obviously was extremely happy. But you know, I think it's just one of those things that you know we need to just kind of let him do his thing, see what he comes up with, and just kind of roll with it because, you know, it's just one of those things where right now the IndyCar series is in a position to where it can't make everybody happy, and it's just going to have you're just going to have people mad and saying Cotman's doing a terrible job, and you know, well, you know something, he's better than Brian Barnhart, so just keep that in mind before you spout off and start raising hell.
Yeah.
So.
Well, on to Sonoma.
This race sucks. I'm sorry.
No, you know, I won't go that far. I really like watching the cars at Sonoma. You got to understand it's going to be like Mid-Ohio. You don't get great passing at Sonoma. No matter how they try and reprofile that corner at the end of the long straight, where there aren't any grandstands, by the way, at the end of the drag strip. But, you know, the turn complexes there are just beautiful. The turn 3A, which became infamous last year when Nelson Philippe spun his car and
ended
up, you know, taking out one Willpower ended up hitting him. Ugh, what a mess. Willpower ended up breaking his back. And such a turnaround story for him. He's coming into this race leading the championship. clinched the Mario Andretti Road Course Championship already and got a pretty good lead in the points, like 41 points, I think, going into this race. It's kind of hard to bet against Will for this race, though. Last road course of the year. It's his specialty. This is the race that he's going to put his heart and soul into. I think that you're going to see Willpower win the race. I don't think there's any way around it.
I agree. It's just one of those things where he's going to devastate everybody because he's that much faster. Because Justin Wilson, he was originally thought to be one of the rolling road course specialist. He's disappointed for the most part this year. Castro Neves maybe, but he's not been fast enough. Dario as you know, Dario's mission is clear: win every race. So I mean, I wouldn't be surprised. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if he did come back and win. But I think that willpower is just a bit much right now. You know, Dario, willpower is nearly a sure thing. Week in and week out on these courses. Dario, little under that. I mean, he'll finish in the top three for sure, I guarantee it, unless something catastrophic happens. But, you know, it's looking like it'll be another Dario willpower show. And I'm hoping, just for the sake of the championship, that Dario wins. But I'm thinking willpower is going to be the one to take the checkered flag, especially after what happened last year. Mm-hmm. You know, kind of got a chip on his shoulder at the old place. And so, yeah, I personally just don't like to watch the race. I'm sorry. I like the cars going over the natural road course. And it's cool that it's in, you know, the Silicon Valley of California with, you know, the wineries and all that. But I think that area of the racetrack itself, I think, is hideous.
Let me tell you what is good about the racetrack. Turn 1, 2, 3, 3A, up through the top, going through the their version of the carrot. You know, I can't remember exactly what it is, but they have this long downhill sweeper that takes you onto the drag strip. Mm-hmm. That portion of the track is beautiful. But once you get on that drag strip, the remainder of the track is flatland garbage.
Nice.
They reprofile it in so many ways. They've got a bunch of chicanes on the run back and everything like that. But, you know, in the end, it was just trying to use up a bunch of real estate to make it so the drag strip works. And, you know, the track is much better suited for pinks than it is for IndyCar.
Mm-hmm. It is. Really any form of motorsport. I don't even think NASCAR is that fun to watch when they go there. So.
Yeah, you know, when NASCAR comes, they lop off the infield portion of the track, if you will, the downhill sweeper that takes you down to the drag strip and the long run back to the hairpin at the end of the drag strip. They usually lop that off, and I don't know. I can't get too excited about Snornoma, Infineon. It's just not that good of a track for IndyCar. It's beautiful, but give me a passing opportunity, you know.
Mm-hmm. Just one, maybe two. Last pass would be nice.
Yep.
But yep. So Dario and Will show is, you heard it here first. Let's
see. And, you know, if you're gonna watch the race this weekend, that's something to concentrate on. If you're gonna focus on anything, focus on Dario and Will and watch the interplay between the two, because those guys are a talent above the rest of the series right now. They are just glowing hot.
Oh yeah.
And if anyone other than those two wins, I will be extremely shocked. But you know, I would consider this another Mid-Ohio 1-2. By Will and Dario.
Mm-hmm. I agree. So, okay. So is that it for the IndyCar, or we got some more for IndyCar?
That's all we got for IndyCar this evening. A little bit light.
Yeah, a little light, but not too light.
The only mention I'm going to make of the American Le Mans series is they're running at Road America this weekend, which that would be a good one to watch. So
yes.
I don't know if they're actually showing it this weekend, or if it's next weekend or when it is. So.
It's on Speed this weekend.
Is it?
Yep.
I saw, you know, I was pulling back into work this afternoon and noticed the Rahal Letterman hauler pulling out and taking off down the road. So obviously the M3s are on their way to Wisconsin as we speak.
Nice. Now time to go find one.
Yeah.
And take it for a little joyride.
Woohoo.
Yeah, but yep. All right then. So go LMS, watch that. It'll be on Speed. I'm not sure what time, but be sure to check back at openpaddock.net.
Is that like a 6-hour race though?
I'm not sure how long it is.
I think I'll have to check. Yeah. This year, Laguna Seca, I think, became like a 6-hour race instead of the 2:45 that they've been running.
That's a long track for 6 hours, Road America. It's a big track. Not size-wise, it's a big track, but whew, it's a big track. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, well, let's move on to rally then. And we will start the rally segment with a somewhat kind of dark note. Not because we relish the fact to talk about it, but there are points to be made on this. And that was what happened this weekend in California, where we had a Baja style race going on. We had called the California 200. It was going on in the Mojave Desert Saturday night, and there came a point where there was a jump between two boulders. I'm sure you've heard of it and seen it on CNN, where the truck went and landed. And when it landed off, you know, kind of off balance, out of control, and hit some spectators, rolled over onto some spectators, 8 of them to be exact, died from the incident, which, you know, it was just a terrible tragedy for any motorsport event, no matter if it's rally, Indy, or any of that stuff, any kind of race, that's just terrible. And but the reason we mention it is not because it was in the news and it was mainstream, but mainly because that there, as with all things motorsport, are learning points that go along with this accident, mainly being mm-hmm. that, you know, when you have if you watch the video shows that the crowd was pretty much set up kind of like a Rally Finland is what it reminded me of, where they were kind of parting the track. And, you know, letting the trucks go through, and then they would hit the jump and then go down the boulder or down onto the landing and, continue on their way. And they were just the crowd was so close to the action. I mean, that's one of the brilliant things about rally is you can get so close to the action and see these cars do just unbelievable things that you don't think cars should be able to do. You know, it's kind of a double-edged sword because now you have incidents like this. But it's – I think when you and I talked about it this weekend just briefly, I think that we decide – you know, I think we kind of came down and said that, you know, this incident really is the fault of two people. Well, not two people, but two bodies, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
The first body being the – obviously the sanctioning body – there's no reason why the fan should be that close to a jump. I mean, that's just my opinion. I think a couple people sharing the opinion. Now, I know a lot of people are like, well, dude, the jump is where it's at. That's where you get to see all the sweet stuff and it's a sweet spectator point and all that. And I agree. It's a brilliant spectating point when it comes to watching the cars. But there needs to be a safe distance or some kind of, some kind of restraint set up to where the people can't get that close. Because, you and I know both from watching rally, going to the rally, for 2 years now and watching it on TV, when a car or a truck comes down off of a jump like that, it is not, I repeat, it is not stable.
Yeah.
You do not have control of the truck when you come down off of a jump. That's just the bottom line. Mm-hmm. I think it's the fault of the body, or the promoter or whomever, because you just can't have people that close.
There are a couple of things going on. The first thing I will say, it is not the fault of the driver.
Oh, no.
I cannot blame the driver one bit in this incident. The driver was going through the marked course by the sanctioning body, which should have been safe for him to race on. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he has to exercise due caution, and you have to wonder about, what these drivers are used to, because it is an amateur series. This is not a professional series.
No.
But you watch the videos and these pickup trucks were just backed up to the stage, they're just backed up to the road, loaded full of people and all this kind of stuff. And, it looked like everybody was having a good time. And it's extremely tragic that it happened. But yet you do have to question a few things. Number one, I will go on a mini rant against Fox News.
Nice. I'm all for that.
I was at Jersey Mike's eating lunch, and they did their normal, two talking heads, and the two talking heads are taking different views. And really, that just makes bad television. We have people yelling back and forth at each other, but it worked for Bill O'Reilly, so let's put it on, this.
Everything.
And please understand, I'm not going off on Bill O'Reilly's viewpoint. I'm going off on the way things are handled on his show and others where they just scream at each other. That's garbage. It's bad television. Mm-hmm. Have these two. This is criminal. The sanctioning body should be held criminally responsible. They should go after them for manslaughter. No.
What?
I totally don't agree with that. The other side, though, is that the sanctioning body, really, they're not at fault. It's the fault of the spectators who are just jumbling up against the stage. Here's the thing. The sanctioning body had some rules in place. They had rules like and I haven't gotten a clear understanding of this because I think several of the news sources have gotten it wrong because I've seen the number all over the place. I've seen the number be 50 feet. They're spectators are required to be 50 foot away from the track. I've heard it 100 foot, and I've heard it 150 foot.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let me tell you something. If you're 150 foot away from the racetrack,
yep,
you're not going to the racetrack to watch.
Well, yeah, you can't be that far back.
Yeah, if you're 100 foot away, you're not going to see anything. Mm-hmm. So the idea that you're going to set a precedent for your spectators that you can come watch our events, but you have to be, ridiculous binocular length away from the action.
Exactly.
That's just not going to happen. So it was ridiculous for the sanctioning body to expect that rule be applied. So the fans were as close as they were because, well, that's where they want to be. If your fans are wanting to be that close, you handle it like they do in Rally America. Where you have marshals at the locations where the spectators are going to gather to watch, and you take care of those locations. You keep the people back. You mm-hmm. shut the stage down if people are not back. You have an alternate route around the spectator area so that you can just divert the drivers if the spectators are being unruly. You do some things to make sure that the spectators don't run the event like it appeared they were.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But, one last note to point out, this is an amateur sanctioning body. And one of the notes in a couple of the articles I read was this is a lot of the reason that these style events don't run very often is because there's a huge amount of liability when you have an unclosed course.
Yeah, it is. So, I mean, it's you're right. If WRC, WRC obviously being a huge and FIA being huge governing bodies. But I mean, I'm just saying, even they, if it gets too out of control, stage is done, come back or, we're just not going to play. And, that's fine. I'm for that because people do not need to, you just can't have this. So, mm-hmm. but whatever. It's tragic. It's terrible, but it is also why on your ticket it says that you are personally held responsible for any kind of we are not liable for any event like this, freak accident. We're not liable.
It's pretty hard to make that. I don't know. I mean, it's not like these spectators were running down the middle of the track in a kilt holding a sign.
Oh, exactly.
I mean, this isn't the Silverstone Grand Prix. there's the liability though is somewhere in between. These fans didn't buy tickets to attend the event because this is out in the middle of Bureau of Land Management land, in the middle of nowhere, and clearly, let's talk about this one last thing here. The spectator area clearly was very popular. Mm-hmm. And that's not just because, hey, a bunch of people decided this would be a great place to go watch this event that weekend. It's probably year on year this event is run and then people have come to know that this is one of the best places to watch it.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know, man. Just don't. my condolences and prayers go out to the families that have lost loved ones. My prayers also go out to the driver who, in the end, you know, is going to feel responsible for taking these lives. And I'm saddened by that, by this having to be on his conscience, because regardless of whether it was the spectators who were just stupid close to the action,
mm-hmm.
or if it was the sanctioning body that didn't protect the fans, regardless of where the investigation takes this, the driver is not at fault. He was racing the course that was laid out for him. He came up over that jump and had no way of protecting those fans when he came up over the jump. The only thing he could have done is shut down the car, gone over the hump at 30 miles an hour.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not what they're doing. They're racing.
Yes. Driving.
Driving. So, you know, I'm somewhat heartbroken for the driver, because, you know, that's something he has to deal with the rest of his life. And I don't feel that he is, you know, I don't feel he's responsible for these deaths in any way, shape, or form.
Mm-hmm. Well, we will move on from the tragic side of rally and go to the event this weekend, the WRC. Going to be participating in one of the fan favorite rallies, one of my favorite rallies, considering it is tarmac, and I'm not overly keen on tarmac rallies. But we do have the Rally Germany, and one of the things that I mentioned today on the site, that a couple of people have mentioned, is that Kim Block is participating in Rally Germany, and he has only participated in two tarmac competitions his whole entire career. Granted, he won both, but let's really look at the competition. You know, it's not Sebastian Loeb. So, you know, but definitely interesting. He's already in Germany. They've already been testing, doing his first test this week, getting ready for it. And he had on hand with him, he had Not necessarily the guy I'd want hanging out with me, but he was chilling with Yari Matti was there.
Yes, know? One of the dangerous duo at Ford who seems to think that rolling the cars is great. Yeah, I don't think Ken Block needs to be hanging out with any of the Ford drivers now.
He needs to be his own Ford driver. Because, yeah, they're just it's terrible. It's been one of those years.
Yeah.
Looking forward to this one being over and getting into the 2000s, that's for sure. But it is his first WRC tarmac test, and you know, he says you know, and to point out what we said on the site, you know, he's already acknowledges that he's gonna get crushed. He knows it's going to happen, and there's just no time, you know, really for him.
Yeah.
I mean, he just hasn't run tarmac. There's no Rally America events that run on tarmac. So, you know, by default, he's already screwed. But I'm just kind of hoping that maybe he just finishes the race and maybe takes some notes is all I'm asking for. So all the Kimi Räikkönen fans will shut up about how cool he is. So
yeah. Yeah, and there's been a lot of talk about Kimi on this surface, and who knows, but we'll see. We'll see. I'm starting to think I owe you dinner next year.
Yeah, he I mean, that's one of the things too, you know. Let's look at it. You've got also Kimi, who's a huge story this weekend, mainly because, you know, of his Formula One championship and pedigree and everything. Yeah, but guess what? Kimi Räikkönen has not been lighting the world on fire in a rally car. Just going to throw it out there.
So here's what I think would be best for Ken Block this weekend. Have an army of DC-wearing fans show up at the event.
Nice.
And at the apex of every major corner on the track, they get out there, their loud DC gear, and they make sure they're prominently displayed at the apex of each corner, and they get a balloon filled with paint.
Nice.
And they hold it out to the side of the track right where Ken's rear end needs to hit. So he hits the apex of the corner just right. I think he'd win.
Oh, he would at that point.
I think. Ugh.
And that was one of the things I mentioned. You know, how I wonder from just, you know, from a curiosity perspective, and I was sure to put it on the site there, but I wonder how much of that Gymkhana stuff will actually work. Because if you look at it, like, you know, minus the balloons and the theatrics that he does on these, look at the, you know, just look at the driving style. It's on tarmac for the most part. There's crazy donuts, crazy slides, and all that kind of stuff.
Amazing car control.
Yeah.
Amazing. Now, let's not fool ourselves. The Gymkhana videos weren't done in one take.
No.
But that said, still amazing car control. I remember they were doing something on Nitro Circus, and Ken Block and Travis Pastrana were doing all these tricks in rally cars. And it was pretty fun to watch the guys, because they'd set up a challenge and they would get one take at it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and one of them was, you know, they'd be coming in coming in full speed straight, mm-hmm. and they painted a box on the track where the car was supposed to end, and they just had to put it into a power slide, whip the car around, you know, 180 degrees and park in that spot. And Pastrana did it and Block blew it.
Yeah.
But still, just to be able to do those kinds of tricks with the regularity that I'm sure Ken has to be able to do to put up one of those Gymkhana videos. I mean, kind of sweet.
Yeah, they're actually really sweet, which we also have another one coming here. Next week we have part one of Gymkhana 3.
Oh, seriously?
Yeah, so.
Very nice.
Yeah, I'm excited for that, and we will be posting it immediately onto the site.
Do you think that'll have a Dirt 3 plug in it?
I'm sure. Either that or Dirt 3 will have a Gymkhana 3 plug.
You know, Rally America has been making, well, Rally Car, whatever they call themselves now. They've been making a lot of press releases over the last couple of weeks, just really hyping their foray at New Jersey Motorsports Park with doing their autocross events.
Oh, the Rallycross?
Yeah, kind of interested to see how this one goes when they actually run it. But, you know, they've been talking about doing the same thing they did at X Games with the Joker course, whether it's a jump.
Jump. You
know, yeah, whatever they end up making the Joker track be for that event. Maybe it's a mud splash or something like that.
Nice. Who knows?
But, you know, talking about, oh, this is just a, you know, a great blend of circuit racing, of rally racing, and drifting. I'm like, drifting? What are you talking about drifting?
No, wait. That is the wrong thing. Wrong discipline.
Maybe it's they talk about drifting because they put, like, Formula D tires on the cars or whatever. The guys go out there in their Formula Drift spec cars and have to run around and actually try and make it do a good lap time instead of just tires around the corner and pop a balloon.
Nice. Yeah, I think, you know, I'm excited for them, and they are making a lot of releases, but they better not get too carried away from this. And furthermore, I really hope they don't get too far away from their actual bread and butter, which is being the premier kind of stage-to-stage rally for the United States. I just, it's great that you're introducing a new kind of version, and I'm excited to watch it just as much as the next guy, but let's remember what came first, and let's remember what also is the best part of it, because if you get too crazy with these stupid drifting, you know, I'm sorry for the fans out there who like to do it, but I think drifting's the dumbest thing I've ever witnessed. The very fact that it gets put into motorsport games is absurd. It's not a sport. It's a style. It's a driving style.
What was that game that came out recently that had it in it? What was that? There was one of Codemasters games.
Yeah.
I knew it had drifting
Grid.
In it. Grid, yeah. I didn't buy Grid because of that. You know, Grid had Spot on it.
Oh, I know.
That's and because it had drifting, I didn't get it.
I played that game, and it was really good. I just didn't do the drifting.
Yeah.
I did the touring cars and the little BRC 1000 things or whatever the hell they were. That was fun. I'll tell you one thing. The ALMS cars they had on there were impossible. I was no good.
Yeah. See, Grid was kind of an offshoot of their Race Driver series, and I played a couple of those and just wasn't impressed with them, even though one of them had, like, Aussie touring cars in it.
No.
And I just didn't think the car control was that good and whatever. You know, it's on the same Emotion engine that we're going to get the F1 game from, so hopefully the F1 game doesn't have drifting in it.
Yeah. Actually, that's going to be one of your Xbox 360 achievements, and they're going to call it Hooning Like Hamilton, and you have to take your F1 car into the street and actually start doing donuts and then get pulled over and beaten by the Aussie cops.
Well, they'll call it the Driven achievement.
Nice.
good job, Sly.
Yeah, right. Hey, Sly Stallone. Can you teach me how to hoon?
Oh, nice.
So, but let's see. We've got some other things going on. We've got Rally Germany this weekend. Like I said, finally. We're going to preview that here right now. A couple things coming into this. Well, actually, before Germany. In Britain, in one of the rounds of the British Rally Championship, we are going to see for the first time ever the Citroën DS3. It will not be the same DS3 chassis that will be in the WRC next year, but it's kind of like the baby brother, the bastardized child, if you will. So, we'll get to watch it. We'll get to watch it, see how it does. I guess they got a really, you know, pretty good driver that's not one of the Sebs driving it, and it'll just be nice to see, you know, exactly how it all turns out for him. But, you know, again, just excited because we finally get to see a sweet ride on the rally. And if you've seen the picture, it looks awesome. Have you seen the picture of it?
Yeah.
Oh, I think it looks awesome. I don't think it looks as good as the Fiesta, obviously. But I think the DS3 looks a lot better than the Citroën C4.
Yeah. You know, so much of what a car looks like, though, is the cool paint job. There's not a chance that any car on the grid is going to look better than Ken Block's next year.
Oh, no.
Not a chance.
Never. Never. Kim Block's ride will forever go in down in WRC lore as the most loud and obnoxious but amazing paint job ever created.
You know, maybe the Ken Block experience is going to bring new blood to the WRC, and suddenly some other, you know, action sports type of companies kind of embrace it and get their spiel going in there. But, you know, you still got to go back to Paris when they did that group photo of the WRC drivers for the year. Yeah. There's all these guys, and at the end there's Ken, and it's kind of like, you know, he's doing his normal photo shoot with the tongue hanging out, the hands out wide, you know, ah!
That's awesome.
And then they show pictures from the weekend of Ken Block hanging around with these halter-clad girls it was hilarious to see the difference in the Ken Block Monster World Rally team and the rest of the WRC.
Yeah, exactly. And it's funny too, because you know that's probably the picture that's getting hung up in the FIA headquarters. And you have, like, Ken Block at the end, like, you're like, what the hell, man? Who's that guy?
Nice. Ken Block, enemy number one of the FIA.
Yeah.
You're bringing the sport into disrepute.
Yeah. Your leather-dressed monster girls have brought Rally into disrepute.
Nice.
And given Max Mosley a forever a heart attack.
So, yes, Max saw those pictures and he says, "Where can I get Ken's girls?"
Yeah, I want to see them down in the basement.
Nice.
Giving
Z punishments.
So, but anyways, back to Rally Germany. We have a couple people. Mads Osberg is not driving in the open class or the WRC class. He's got an S2000 machine. We have Francois Duval coming back to the WRC after a very long time, but not quite like, I mean, we're talking like maybe a year, so we haven't seen him in a while. But it's really funny too, though, because if you listen to Total Rally this week, it's really funny because Colin Clark, who's the radio WRC guy and also does IRC events, the dude's traveling, you know, nearly every day out of the year. Mm-hmm. But he actually interviewed Francois Duval on the phone during the show this week, and it was hilarious because Francois Duval was not happy. Mm-hmm. He was not enjoying the interview.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it was, and Colin at the end was like, that was one of the hardest, you know, that was like a really hard interview or whatnot. And I guess come to find out they have some history or something, and Colin said some not so nice things about Francois. And so, you know, it is what it is, but it was hilarious to listen to. So Francois Duval in the rally, that'll be fun, as well as we will have, you know, Kim Block, Kimi Raikkonen, and Danny Sordo back on the tarmac. So, yeah, that's what we have. So let's go ahead and fancy some predictions. I will go ahead and say that I think it will be Sebastian Loeb, who's won it the last six times.
Go figure.
Yeah, right. It'll also be second place will be Sordo, and third will be Ogier.
I'm going to do something completely different than you.
All right.
Ogier is going to win, followed by Seb Loeb, and third will be Kimi Raikkonen.
Oh,
because he has to get a podium or else I owe you lunch.
Exactly. So you better hope that Petter Solberg, Jari-Matti Latvala, and Mikko Hirvonen, and potentially Jim Khanna himself, all nice. Who will have open class cards. I'm saying on the premise of the overall cars involved, you know, I'm not ruling out all the cars is all I'm saying. But anyways, regardless, if he can get around all those guys, he will, you know, then he'll fancy a chance. But with the Citroens, as good as they are, he's just not going to do it.
Yeah. Interesting with Germany. There are a couple new stages this year. You've got some really long stages, like a 48 kilometer stage. So there's a lot that goes into it. It could be a fun weekend to turn on the World Rally Radio and listen in. So
no, I plan on doing so. I can't wait.
Yeah, that'll be fun.
And maybe if I can wake up early enough on Saturday and Sunday, no guarantees there, but keep it to the Twitter as I may tweet some live rally stuff.
Yeah.
But I gotta
wait. Speaking of Kimi Raikkonen, he's kind of bridging all of our categories this evening that we cover. He is the F1 world champion of past note. He is attempting this rally career. Who knows what he's going to do next year? But I guess up on there's a Kimi Raikkonen webpage that has some comments from him. And this is a Finnish website that's been translated by Google, which obviously you can tell the quality of this translation is pretty. I'll read some of it to you just so you can laugh. But Raikkonen in America? Go to IndyCar?
Nice. Yes.
The latest news that Kimi is also included as options to compete in the IndyCar series. The Red Bull, thanks to new roads, may open the Finnish frontier. The Finnish Iceman, a very good feel to it, perhaps still in the new environment, more and more at home moving in the rally world, and with it increasingly reduces the possibility that we will ever have to see the F1 race in a grid of course marches.
What?
Yeah, obviously. I mean, it's very clear. He's coming to IndyCar next year.
Oh, nice. With Sato?
Sato. And
nice.
No, basically, it sounds like Kimi has included as one of his options that, you know, telling Red Bull, I'd be open to doing rally next year. I'd be open to doing IndyCar next year. Who knows what this actually means? It could just be, you know, some fan asked him, hey, so would you ever do IndyCar? Yeah, I'd do IndyCar.
Would you ever do drugs? I'd do them all day. that would be hilarious and also not gonna happen.
Well, that would be awesome if it did, but you know, Takuma Sato is having trouble with IndyCar. I don't think Kimi's gonna be too motivated when it comes to IndyCar either.
Yeah, I swear to say, Sato is having a hard time, and I don't think a drunk finish, you know, has been F1 champion is going to make much of a difference.
You know, but it does beg the question, are there any good vodka producers in the United States?
He could team up with Fuzzy.
Well, you know, there you go. Fuzzy's premium vodka, and maybe Ben and Jerry's on the side of the car, too.
Nice, nice.
Yeah. Seriously.
You could have Red Bull sponsor with Fuzzy's vodka on the side for your Red Bull vodka mix.
And then the popular United States mall chain, Lids.
Lids, yeah. So you could get all of his stupid
flat brimmed hats.
I like the flat brim hats, but not Kimmy's flat brim hats. Hats look stupid.
The Buddy Rice flat brim.
Nice.
It's Buddy. A man who shouldn't have a flat brim who's sporting a flat brim.
Yeah. What the hell was that? Where did he come from with that?
I don't know, man.
Buddy Rice? I seen that. I was like, what the hell is he doing? Is he redefining himself for the future generation of IndyCar drivers to make himself actually look viable to a team that wasn't?
You know, I'm no judge of the attractiveness of men, but let me say from my limited experience, Buddy Rice is not an attractive man.
And
then throwing on that flat brim doesn't do a thing for him.
No. But whatever. Let's see. What else do we have to talk about tonight? F1?
A little bit. David Richards?
Oh.
Yeah, you know, every now and then. It's the 3-week break. You've got to get out the Rolodex and track down somebody you haven't talked to in like 6.5 years.
Oh, yeah, right. And then actually ask him for a valued opinion.
Yeah. So Pit Pass drug him out of the closet, and nice. This is what Richards had to say. New teams have harmed F1's funding.
Well, quote.
You know, you and I have talked about this a bit. You know, why Ferrari has been just so adamantly opposed to the new teams, mm-hmm. and talking about third cars and everything like that, because these teams that come in that have limited technical capabilities and therefore are at the way back of the pack, they don't do anything for F1. Being able to sell themselves. If anything, it looks ludicrous that these teams are tooling around at the back of the grid. Milka Duno-esque.
Milka Duno-esque. Yes.
Indeed.
When GP2 is faster than you, you've got a problem.
Yeah. So, oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. When that happened at
Monaco.
When it happened at Monaco, oh my goodness! I mean, just awful. I mean, it brought up the several weekends this year where the entire Indy Lights field has been faster than Milka Duno. Granted, the Indy Lights cars are 450 horsepower compared to the 670 in an Indy car. So,
yeah, nice.
Yeah. Anyway. Can't say I disagree with David Richards on this one. He's always for an interesting quote, and he's something of a promoter when it comes to these things, because he opens his mouth and flaps his gums just like an Eddie Gossage or a Paul Stoddard. You know, he's just got that vein to him, and as much as I see that, I like that, I really do, but. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's a bit of a train wreck to watch at times too. So
nice. Train wreck.
Yeah.
All right.
If you took a $20 bill and drug it through a trailer park, this is what you would get, you know.
Go Mini.
So
well, Pirelli has decided to go ahead and start testing their tires for next year's campaign. And with that, they Mercedes went ahead and released Nick Heidfeld, finally, so that he could go and test the Pirelli tires in a Toyota.
A 2009 spec Toyota car is going to give you all the tire data for the 2011 spec F1 car.
Yeah. You know what's hilarious about it, though, is I'm glad they finally sent Heidfeld out of Mercedes. Because I'm so sick of all the little freaking Heidfeld fanboys. Why did Michael get a ride? Nick Heidfeld is just a good candidate. Well, you know something? What the hell kind of personality does Nick Heidfeld have? He's worse than, like, the most boring guy I've ever met. He does nothing. I'm sure he's a great guy. I'm sure he's a nice guy. But as far as personality, I would have picked Kamui Kobayashi before I would have picked Heidfeld. He has no personality. Kobayashi's fiery.
Yep.
Heidfeld's, a stinking, what do they call that? A buzzkill.
Nice.
And he looks
homeless. Party was going great until Nick Heidfeld walked into the room.
Yeah, right? He looks homeless.
Downer!
Yeah, right? It's like, oh, that guy's here.
Over here.
Yeah.
It is interesting, though, because you brought up the point about Michael. Mercedes has said they're not hiring a replacement for Heidfeld to be the first driver in waiting behind Herr Schumacher's neck, snapping like a dry twig.
I mean, why do you need another driver? I don't get it, because Schumacher's already said he's staying.
The only reason you need another driver is in case one of their two gets injured. But
okay,
what role does a backup test driver serve in F1 these days? I think they just go out and drive the 2008 car at sponsor events or something.
Yeah, they drive it at sponsor events.
Look at Donut.
And they kind of drive it in a straight line.
Yep.
They drive the new car in a straight line for a couple hours, and then they're like, hey, pay me.
Yeah.
What'd you do?
Because everybody knows you don't let high-ranking FIA officials touch your car.
Oh, of course.
Especially in a straight line.
Oh, jeez, Muhammad.
Nice.
Muhammad bin Suleiman, you stupid idiot.
He
drives a mean Z in Cambodia or Croatia, where they play hard.
They play hard.
And I always found it ironic that I'm the one that comes onto the show and just trashes people like him and all pretty much FIA officials who are annoying. And oh, by the way, though, he's yelling at me in Kim Block's Dirt 2. He's yelling at me. So
nice.
He's like, nice. What are you doing, man? I'm like, get out of the way. You suck.
He's one of those talking heads on the side of the track, all cartoonized and everything. It's
right?
You're one of those jerks with the FIA.
Yeah. Why are you on my game? It's automatically not fun because I know this now.
Yeah, this isn't one of those cases of, you got your peanut butter in my chocolate. I mean, this was not a marriage made in heaven.
Nice. Yeah, it was bad.
So, some quotes coming up. Especially from Christian Horner regarding Spa. First of all, the last couple of weeks, they've been downing the Renault engine. You know, we're down on horsepower by 30 horsepower, whatever. And if we had a good engine like the Mercedes, which we tried to get, but, you know, McLaren said no. Yeah. If we had a good engine, this wouldn't be an issue. But now we're going to Spa. And Spa has long straights, and that 30 horsepower is very necessary.
Nice.
A lot has been made of Ferrari's chances at Spa and Monza, particularly because they're the long tracks with the long straights and everything like that. And it certainly doesn't favor the Renault, which, you know, if you're watching any of these races, it seems similar to the battles that Renault – the Renault F1 team was having with Schumacher in Fernando Alonso's title fights. You'd watch the two cars, you know, neck and neck going down the straight, and Schumacher just wouldn't get enough to get around him. But once they got into the tight infield twisty portion, Alonso would just leg it out, and then they'd get back on the straight, and Schumacher would pull right back up, and then Alonso would leg it out. And you know, if for some reason the Red Bulls get on pole, then it's an issue. But I don't think that's going to happen. And unless they can find some horsepower just laying around in Renault's storage rooms, I'm thinking McLaren and Ferrari are going to have the better of them at those two tracks.
And
I'm not saying they're going to finish like eighth. I'm going to say that they're going to finish like third, fourth, something like that.
And you're talking Red Bull will finish that.
Yeah.
I think I'll have to go. I'm going to have to say that I think, you know, despite what Horner's saying or what kind of doubt he's trying to instill or whatever it is he's doing, I think that Renault stands a great chance, or not Renault, but Red Bull has just as good a chance to win, mainly because they are better on the downforce. They have the flexi wing. And I don't know what they're talking about with this shortage of horsepower, because wasn't it just a couple where was it? There was a race that we just had recently where the Renault engine was the fastest in the speed trap. So, like, I guess I just don't understand. But, I mean, I don't see any reason why they're going to be in any bet worse off shape than anybody else. I mean, the Ferraris typically handle like crap, but go really fast in a straight line, like you said. But the Renault, I think, goes at a decent click. I think they'll be like the Renaults were to Schumacher, in the sense that Schumacher will, you know, the Ferraris will catch up to the Red Bulls, but I think, you know, the amount of downforce that the Red Bull can produce will see that they pull out, and then you just won't have a lot of passing. Because if you look at it, you know, a lot of teams decide to go with not a lot of downforce, Force India, and they run brilliantly in the straight line. But when it comes down to getting into the actual corners, you're just like, yeah, we're not that fast.
We shall see how it goes. I mean, I don't have a bone in this. I'd love to see Red Bull win the championship. I'd love to see Fernando Alonso win the championship. I'm not really going to say which should win or anything like that. I will say I'd rather not Lewis Hamilton.
No.
Hoonmaster Hamilton.
Yeah, I hope that he never wins another race. He will win another race, but I hate him. So.
The British press hates you.
Yeah, well, I don't care. That would make the British press and current 9/11 activists this show. I'm just hitting everybody at once.
Yeah.
We also, let's see, we had some news. Remember that really crappy race that they called Bahrain? Probably not, because you were probably sleeping.
See, now, Let me qualify it, though. I seem to recall many races at Bahrain sleeping through.
Oh, of course.
Anyway, go ahead.
Well, they've decided to offset the really crappy setup that they had this year, because remember they expanded the track or extended the track so that it could be, so that they could accommodate the extra cars. Well, come to find out that extra section was like nothing but the bumps from hell and and like terrible.
The rest of the track was great, but when I got into that section of the track, you know, my car fell apart.
Yeah, literally.
Parts falling off the car as they hit the bumps.
The underside of the car was just smashing.
Yeah.
That thing, especially under heavy fuel. I mean, there's no way. But they've decided, Bahrain, that is, has decided that they are going to cancel out that portion of the track. So they're going back to the old style.
Yeah, I can't say that's a big shocker.
Yeah,
it was
terrible.
Their argument for why they did it in the first place was silly. They're like, well, we're going to have more cars here, so we need to make the track longer so the racing's good. No!
You had 6 cars extra.
I just don't get it.
And it was I guess
this portion of the track was added so they could do sports car racing with multiple classes and a lot higher car counts on the track, so they'd have more room for more cars on the track, basically. But it just, boo.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's not really worth talking a whole lot about other than to say, Bahrain, we fully support you, but still. Your event's terrible. Yeah.
So they've decided to go ahead and revert to the old way. Yeah. We'll see what happens. I don't think it, like you said, I don't think it's going to be much of a different feel. I think it's still going to be terrible. So, I think that's all.
That's all we have this evening. Yeah. The only other thing that I'd mention is I've heard some rumors that Bernie Ecclestone's his epic money making machine, which just recently got its crosshairs off of Silverstone, is settling on a new target.
Oh, is it Austin?
No, it is not Austin. They have their sights squarely set on Interlagos.
Oh yeah, I heard about that.
Yes, that racetrack out in the middle of the slums, Sao Paulo.
And now you'll get held up.
Yeah, what? Exactly. The race where 1 in 4 customers comes home with 1 less wallet.
Exactly.
But anyway.
If you're lucky, a gunshot.
I'm not surprised. I mean, it seems like Sao Paulo has been kind of a sacred cow because of Senna and a lot of the history behind the track and everything like that. Bernie really hasn't gone hard after them, where he's gone hard after Spa and he's gone hard after Silverstone and he's out there making waves against Monaco of all places.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, I can't imagine how that negotiation went. Yeah, we think you guys should pay a higher sanctioning fee. And they said, no, I think you're just going to take what we give you. You're welcome to come to the Principality in a race if you want. If not, I don't know. We could put IRC here for that.
Yeah, right. We can have them here again.
Rally cars
on
Monte Carlo street
course.
That'd
be awesome. That'd be one hell of a rally cross for the Rally America series.
That would be. That'd
Maybe
be.
Put a Joker jump over the harbor.
Nice. Into the harbor.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so. start. Yeah, anyway.
Nah.
So, yeah, they've got their sights set on Sao Paulo, which you can certainly understand. I mean, they need to build a security fence around that place and really the facilities, especially the drainage on the track, needs to be taken care of.
Mm-hmm.
But that said, I'm afraid of what's going to happen because I love Sao Paulo. I love the track.
I do too.
It's a beautiful layout. So I hate to see that one screwed up.
I like the bowl.
Yep.
So, all right. Well, that's all we have this week. So enjoy. We'll be back next week on Tuesday, hopefully, as Wednesday will be not a good day. And I will also be getting ready for Chicago, hopefully.
Ooh.
Yeah, I don't know if – I haven't heard anything from the track, but I'm rather certain that it will be just one of those things. So, stick around. Maybe we'll have some Chicagoland stuff next week, maybe.
Yeah.
As we talk about all the other races that happened this weekend, hopefully they produce results worthy of discussion on this webpage.
Yeah, a little shout out to Kentucky. Like I said, I'm going to that event, and one of the things that's enabling us to go to this race is an interesting ticket package that they have on the website. The ticket package allows for you to buy 4 tickets, 4 hot dogs, and 4 Cokes for like $125 if you're in the first 10 rows, and $135 if you're in the next 10 rows, and $145 if you're in the next 10 rows.
Mm-hmm.
That is a sweet deal.
Yeah.
I'm all over that one. And I think the 4 and the 7-year-old are going to attend their first IndyCar race. So
nice. Do you know if Oh no, that's hilarious. Have you ever seen on Twitter the fake Milkaduno account?
No, I've heard about it, but I haven't seen it.
It's hilarious. Something was happening. Sebastian Saavedra told everybody to check out the Family Guy tweet on there, and he like put it. He's like, it's even funnier than the fake Milkaduno Twitter account.
Nice.
And the fake Milkaduno Twitter account retaliates against Saavedra by saying, "F you, you look like a porcupine."
Nice.
So
he does have that going on, doesn't he?
He does, but it's awesome. He can swing it. Milkaduno can't say anything because she sucks, and even fake Milkaduno can't say anything because, in fact, her Twitter avatar is Milkaduno's face, and she sucks. So done.
Yeah, done is what I hope to hear about Milkaduno's career very shortly.
Yes, as does everybody.
Well, that is all we have to bring to you this evening. So thank you for tuning into the Paddock this week.
Yes, thank you. Make sure you join the Twitter and the Facebook. A big thank you to all those who did. And I'm going to say also, our friends, last thing I promise, our friends at Inside the Race have a iPhone app, which we are featured on sometimes because they a lot of people have, a lot of people have the iPhone apps and everything. And Inside the Race, whom I met at Mid-Ohio, they're a great site. They always link to our stuff. But they made a iPhone app for their website. And everybody who purchases it from now till the end of the year, all that money goes to Racing for Cancer charity.
Ooh, okay.
So make sure you please swing by and pick up the Inside the Race app. It's brilliant. It has all. It's like really a blogger or a blog reader's is like a best friend to them because they always put out like a list of what people are talking about in IndyCar, and so they always put our stuff on there and a lot of the other kind of blogs, some of the bigger time blogs even they put on there. So just a great app, and I've already been messing around with it, and for a great cause, so buy it.
Nice.
So, and in other news, Sebastian Saavedra just retaliated by saying, "Do I really look like a porcupine? I've heard lots of things. I've been called Hideki in anime, but porcupine, really?"
So. He's like the Japanese kid that has hair that's taller than him.
So needless to say, it's really funny. So by the time people get the show, they're not going to be able to read it. It'll be expired. But just have you know that we are enjoying Sebastian Saavedra and fake Milkaduno going at it toe-to-toe. Really picked up off where the Schechter Tagliani thing kind of came in. So yay.
Yay.
But All right. Well, we're going to get out of your hair, but thanks a lot for having us, and we'll see you next week. Enjoy the rally radio at wrc.com, as well as IndyCar at Sonoma, so, and ALMS at Road America.
Good deal.
All right.
Good weekend.
Talk to you later.